Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the podcast. Before we get to my guest this week, I'm going to be doing stand-up on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert this Wednesday, the 15th. Show's 11:35 on CBS, and I'm really excited to be back on doing stand-up again on the show. I hope you can check it out. And my guest this week, Chris Matthews, host of Hardball on MSNBC. I'm a big fan of Chris. I think he's an important voice in politics right now. He's got a new book out that we talk about called Bobby Kennedy, A Raging Spirit, and it's very relevant to today. He gives new insight into Bobby, talks about what kind of leader Bobby was and would be today, and the kind of leadership that we need today and the kind of leadership that's lacking today. So it's a really relevant book to for the times, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. And Chris is just a terrific conversationalist. So enjoy Chris Matthews. Chris.
Well, hi.
How are you?
I'm great. You're not the guy from that movie, are you?
Paul Mercurio, the Strictly Ballroom guy? No, but it's a good question. The Karate Kid.
Karate Kid. Wasn't he Paul Mercurio?
No, he's Ralph Macchio, but we look a lot alike.
There's somebody I know is Paul Mercurio.
You're right. Real quick, there's an Australian actor named Paul Mercurio who was in a movie called Strictly Ballroom, and then he was in some movies with.
Okay.
And I had to change the spelling of my name because he got in the Actors Union before I did. So.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I've got a Chris Matthews who played football. I think he just got cut. And then there's somebody in Australia or somewhere that plays rugby. So in the old days when I was stupid enough and narcissistic enough to Google myself, I never, ever do it now.
No.
I'm not crazy. It ruins your day.
Oh,
I'm not
going to
do it. You can't get out of your head.
No. It's terrible. And by the way, we met briefly at The Late Show with Colbert when you were there a while back. I just came in to tell you what a huge fan I was. And thanks for chatting with me. And
I just did it with... He was unbelievable last week with me. I'd done it. This is probably the next time I did it. He was all about Bobby Kennedy. His father died in a plane crash with two of his brothers right that week.
Yeah.
And Bobby was buried, and he was unbelievably emotional about Bobby.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Chris Matthews, by the way, host of Hardball on MSNBC, and a show that I watch religiously. And your Trump Watch essays are must-see TV and so well-written and great point of view. And you have a great book out called Bobby Kennedy, A Raging Spirit, and just wanted to talk to you about that for a bit. And I've been wanting to talk to you forever because you're such an important voice, especially these days in politics. But just real quick, I sort of want to jump off this for a second. Your first job in Washington was Capitol Police. You worked for the Capitol Police.
I was armed and uniformed at a 38 special. And I had with a 3 to 11 shift. I started working at 3 in the afternoon. I spent the day working in a senator's office. That was the deal. He didn't give me any money for working in his office. He said, no. You work in my office, answer the mail, write little speeches, and I'll let you be a cop at night.
Wow.
That's how it worked in the end. And now it's professional, but guys like Harry Reid, Mike Barnicle, a lot of us were all cops in those days.
Oh, wow.
Back in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, my best friend's father ran the Capitol Police up in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was a page in the Senate when I was in college, and man, it was so interesting to see how it really works behind the scenes and everything. It was just
I learned a lot. I mean, that's where I got my Bobby idea, because Bobby, according to one of the building engineers, we talk all the time. He said the only liberal Democrat who regularly said hello to the police was Bobby, and this is something I heard back in '71. I began to think this guy's interesting, Bobby Kennedy. He's not just a liberal and good for minorities. But he's good for working people generally.
Yeah, which surprised me in reading that and you talking about that in my research. But you said it had to do in part with him being called the runt of the family by his dad, and sort of how he was sort of, you know, forced to be a tough guy, but that wasn't really his nature. And once his dad had a stroke, he kind of got back to the kind of kid he was in some ways. Explain that a little bit, how that sort of fed this idea of him being able to connect to the common man.
Well, you just said it. Look at, he split there. I think he was a sweet, generous kid, but his father made fun of him all, said he was a runt. He wasn't as tall as his big brothers. His brothers were all 6 feet. He's about 5'8". He was regular height. He was he's skinny, and he was kind of awkward. Mm. Even his wife, Ethel, told me that he was awkward. He didn't have the elegance of his older brother, Jack. Mm-hmm. He's like 8 years older than him. I think that's why he identified with other people that were left out, overlooked, looked down on. I'm pretty sure that was it. He always said it was the Irish thing, that the Irish were beat up when they first got to this country and all that. But I think it was just a personal experience. And then he became his brother's tough guy. I mean, he would go around to these governors and all in 1960, and he would say, "You're with my brother." And they wouldn't get out of that room alive until they said they were for him. And he would scare the hell out of them. Mm. No, he was a tough enforcer. And he became the brother and the son that the family wanted. They wanted a tough guy, and he became that guy. And I think only at the end, when the old man had his stroke and was debilitated, did Bobby become Bobby again. And he began to really focus on victims and not just the villains he was after.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned in a conversation you had that one of the members of the Kennedy family said that, quote, "the villains of this world create their own hells on earth, so focus on the victims," which was Bobby's view of things. And expand on that a little bit, if you would.
Well, sure. Like, we have these mass shootings now. We didn't have them before. And we've had assassinations for years. I mean, an amazing number of presidents were shot at, and a number of them killed: Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, mm-hmm. Kennedy. I mean, this country's a violent country, but you really can't spend your life hating or seeking revenge against the killers because they're dead.
Yeah.
They almost always go in the gunfire themselves, or they're like Sirhan in prison for life, or Manson or something like that. They generally, the worst people get killed in the act, or they get punished totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea was that hating Roy Hoffa or Jimmy Hoffa, a big crooked labor guy, or focusing on LBJ or Roy Cohn, another guy he couldn't stand, the guy with McCarthy, real bad guy. He decided that basically I'm going to spend my life looking at victims and worrying about African Americans and California farm workers and Native Americans and really poor people in this country, because I can do something for them. I can't really do something to make lives worse for the villain.
Right.
And I think it was pretty useful in life to think about that usually the villains end up, in most cases, thank God, punishing themselves. But the victims are always out there, and they're always worth your time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this book should be used in every political science course in college, because it's detailed, it's insightful, it talks about moral leadership and focuses on the idea of empathy in leading, and also just great sort of behind the scenes moments of the political maneuvering and so forth. It's so good on so many levels. And I tend to follow the Kennedys a lot, but there were things about Bobby I learned from this book that I had no idea about. And you say in your introduction, quote, "this book is about the Bobby Kennedy we'd want to have today, the kind of leader we lack today." And before I started reading the book, I thought about today. And if Bobby were had a president, if he were a junior senator and he had a president leading his party like Trump, what would he do? Would he speak up? Because a lot of the Republicans aren't, obviously. What would Bobby do with a guy like this in office?
Oh, God. I think he would take him on. He's a fighter. He had that mick in him. He just liked to fight.
Yeah.
He didn't mind taking on. He had a look in his eye that was pretty cold, that he could go after a bad guy. I think the good thing he could have done is whenever there's an issue like the Confederate statues and we're going to do with them, or the take a knee thing with the NFL, the African-American players, Bobby would, instead of saying, "Here's a chance to divide the country, let's fight on that ground, the ethnic stuff, the racial stuff," he mm-hmm. would say, like when Martin Luther King, in the book, when Martin Luther King was killed, he walked into a black, tough neighborhood in Indianapolis, and he had to tell the people there that King, the hero of all times, had been shot by a white guy, and he had to explain it to them and try to win some kind of understanding in that crowd.
And he was able to connect with them because he mentioned his own family member, and he had very common ground with them on that.
Well, he did the best he can, and he said, we have to make an effort. My favorite line from him when I'm reading that speech 100 times is, "We have to make an effort." And I think that's all anybody can ask for people. You know, mm-hmm. when you have history of division, you got to say to people, let's just make an effort to get along. Let's make an effort. And I think he was telling that to a black crowd, a tough urban crowd. They were not, well-off middle-class people. They were living in the city in a tough neighborhood. And they just heard the worst news in the world. And he said, "We got to say a prayer for our country and our people." And he wanted us to work things out. I think that we have politicians today on one side and also the other side who enjoy this endless war, this culture war.
Mm.
They just like it. It's good for them politically. And if they can get people riled up and hating the other side, even if they get their 40%, they do okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's the trouble with politics, that you can make it with 40%. You can have 60% hating you, but it still works in the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned that speech in Indianapolis after MLK is assassinated. And what struck me is how prescient it was and relevant to today, because this passage, he says, what we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love, wisdom, and compassion toward one another. And boy, do we ever need that right now? It's just unbelievable, the tie. It's why the book is so relevant. It's relevant to today. It's really well written. And one last thing. This goes to Rose Kennedy on page 143. You say, Rose Kennedy, watching her sons commit to all this consuming, this all-consuming enterprise, saw what role each would play. Jack would be the candidate. Bobby would be responsible for getting him elected. Was that a learned, but did the parents sort of orchestrate that sort of those job titles and roles, or was that just organic?
I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think in the case of Joe Kennedy, he wanted one of his sons to be president. In the case of, he also wanted the other son to be attorney general. I mean, he said, as you saw in the book, he told Clark Clifford, the guy representing the Kennedys, the son, he said, let me tell you one thing, Mr. Clifford, Robert Kennedy will be the next attorney general. It was one time he just told Jack. He didn't tell Jack who to name Secretary of State or anything else, but he wanted one job. He wanted it for his son, Bobby. Bobby delivered on the campaign. He got his brother elected, and he wanted him. He also, I think, was smart enough to know that his son, Jack, needed a counsel. He needed somebody around him when it got scary.
Yeah.
And Bobby was one tough guy to have in your corner.
Yeah.
And it worked out that way on civil rights, on the Cuban Missile Crisis. God help us if Bobby hadn't been there to get us through that.
Yeah.
He got us through it all.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I learned writing what you asked about. Why I get interested. When I wrote the two books on Jack Kennedy, I learned every time something happened, I go, where would we be without Bobby?
Yeah. And in fact, it was Bobby's idea to offer up to the Russians that we take our missiles out of Turkey as a way to sort of de-escalate this thing with Cuba.
Yeah, well, that was a pretty smooth move, because even though they kept it secret, and a lot of people on the right would have said that was selling out, God, if we had gone to nuclear war over missiles in Turkey, history would not have forgiven the Kennedys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I could talk to you all day, and maybe down the road I could get more
Please
time
do.
With you.
But
you
grab me sometime.
You're fantastic. I'll check in with your assistant, and maybe we can get together more. Host of Hardball on MSNBC, author of this terrific book that you have to read, Bobby Kennedy, A Raging Spirit, Chris Matthews, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Paul.